Welcome to Rowdy Southern Saturday. We're excited to roll out the same great show you've been enjoying for the past 2 years under this new name. Thank you for continuing to support us and our love for college football. Let's get rowdy.
Let's get rowdy. Is that good?
We're trying new stuff today.
I don't think we're going to try any of those.
We're trying all kinds of new stuff.
We have to have a new intro.
So, real talk. I know that our listeners are like not in our own personal group message, but I'm getting really, really tired of having this conversation over text. Is Lane Kiffin going to Auburn and pulling a Tuberville or not? I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think Lane Kiffin's going anywhere.
All right. So I really didn't think I haven't thought so from the jump of all these rumors starting, just because I feel like that there's a lot of people that are looking too much into what he said after one game. But I will say I feel like it's more of a 50-50 now than it was a week or two ago.
Matt, I feel the same. Like, the more I've read into it on social media, the more I've seen tweets come out, and I mean, like we've talked about too, honestly, it probably is Jimmy Sexton just trying to get Lane Kiffin more money. But I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot surrounding the rumors, Lane Kiffin and Auburn. I've honestly seen more of that than I've seen anything about Hugh Freeze too. I don't know. Like, I could see it happening. I think the more research I've done about Auburn, the more I could see it as a more attractive choice if you were to pick Auburn over Ole Miss. But I'm still in agreement with you guys where I think Ole Miss right now, it's the better program to be a part of. It doesn't really make sense for Lane Kiffin to go from a program he's built up. He's brought in the recruits. He's done what he's done in the transfer portal. He's gotten them to where they're consistently winning 10 games a year. And now he's got to go to Auburn and completely do the exact same thing. And granted, I think his ceiling would probably be higher at Auburn. But I mean, he's proven that he can win at Ole Miss, even in the best division in college football. So if I was Lane, I wouldn't leave. But I don't know. The longer it goes on, the more likely I think it's going to happen.
I don't understand. Like, well, first of all, let me just say I agree with you, Whit. Like, I think I don't know why Lane would leave. I think you have a higher. I think your ceiling at Auburn is higher, but you've made Ole Miss relevant. Like, I feel like Ole Miss can be whatever Lane Kiffin wants. Like, Ole Miss is at Lane Kiffin's beck and call right now. Like, Lane Kiffin can do anything, move any puzzle piece from the boosters and whoever's behind the scenes there with that entire program. So, like, why would you leave and go to Auburn? And Auburn's got a recruiting class for, pretty sure that has like 10 commits right now, only 10 commits. And now, granted, 8 of them are 4-stars, but you're going to have to do a lot of work on the recruiting trail and in the portal to somewhat even salvage this class. Because this class is already terrible. And Ole Miss, he's sitting at like 23 right now. He's already the portal king, so he can get more commits, bump Ole Miss up a few spots, and then land all his portal transfers, and he can just keep rolling like he is. I don't understand why all these rumors are that Auburn is so dead set to go get Lane, because Lane doesn't love recruiting. He's not a terrible recruiter, but he doesn't love recruiting. So I feel like at Ole Miss, he's in a better position to do what he does with his not super fiery into the recruiting thing and be the portal king. At Auburn, you need to recruit better. I think it's a different dynamic. I don't know why they would leave, and I don't know why Auburn's focus is not Hugh Freeze, because like I said last week, I think it should be.
Well, look, and Chad, I agree with you, but I've got a couple of things to say. All right, one, I said last week that Hugh Freeze is known to have a huge win and then a massive dud. And then what did he do last week? Huge win at Arkansas, massive dud losing to UConn. That's the Hugh Freeze experience, and Ole Miss can attest to that. The year that they beat Alabama, they lost to Memphis the, like two or three weeks later in 2015. So it like that's what Hugh Freeze has always been known to do. I don't know if it's little details that get left out or what. So, I mean, in Auburn, people realize that. I think Lane Kiffin mentioned that he doesn't love recruiting, but I kind of disagree with you on that a little bit because he's gone into the portal. He had the number one portal class last year. When his first season at Ole Miss, they were in the 60s in recruiting that COVID year, and then he bumped them. He got so many flips that he got them into the 20s. And he's consistently been and had Ole Miss in the top 20. Right now they're 23. And in the age of NIL, that's kind of where Ole Miss probably will be. And then I think he'll add on recruits, and I imagine finish top 20 overall. So I think Lane Kiffin, I mean, he has the pictures on Twitter and Instagram of him driving dudes around in the Rolls Royce or the Bentley. The Dior Jordan ones that he's got, flying on private jets, going to California when he went and got Jackson Dart. Like, there was all of this stuff. Like, I think he does a good job recruiting. Where I feel like Lane Kiffin has to decide is this. What is your end goal? Is your end goal to go to the NFL? Is your end goal to go to Alabama? Because it's been pretty reliably sourced that if the Alabama job opened up, that's a job that he really, really wants. That's like a job that he covets to have. It's not a secret. If you take the Auburn job, that is something that goes out the door. You're not going to be the Alabama coach if you go to Auburn. They're not going to hire the Auburn coach. If it's the NFL, does Auburn get you to the NFL more quickly than Ole Miss? And I don't think so, because if you just keep on winning, the NFL is going to come knocking when the time comes. So, for me, Lane Kiffin has to decide what's more important and what's going to get me to that end goal. And right now, I think you've got the perfect marriage between Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, where Ole Miss is a blank canvas with an athletic director in Keith Carter that has openly said, hey, we're going to change where we're allocating our funds based on what our head coach wants. And so he's got an athletic director that's willing to work with him. The Grove Collective gained, I want to say, like $4 million in 2 weeks for NIL, just because they know that Lane Kiffin is a commodity that they want to keep. And he said, hey, we need this Grove Collective to step up. Anything that Lane Kiffin has asked of Ole Miss fans, attendance-wise, Grove Collective, NIL, all that stuff, they've responded in droves. So to me, why would you mess that up and go to a place that maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't?
See, what becomes more attractive about the Auburn job is if they can promise the same things that Ole Miss is promising to him now. Which, you look at Auburn, you go, okay, they have the booster situation. You know, multiple coaches have come in here and been ran out by the same people who want to be a part of the football team just because they spent a lot of money on the program. And in reality, really, you should let the people that know what they're doing with the football program run the football program and just give them all the money to let them work. And I mean, maybe this whole experience with Brian Harsin has opened the eyes of some of the boosters where, like, you kind of figure out you ran Gus out a little bit too early and you ended up with a guy who you didn't really believe in or that didn't really fit the job. You just kind of went for the best case scenario of the guys that were left. And maybe now they're saying, all right, let's take a step back. Let's bring in a guy like Lane Kiffin, give him the keys to the program, and let him work. And if that's the case, I mean, sky's the limit for Lane Kiffin at Auburn. But like I said, I mean, he's still got a good gig at Ole Miss. Matt's right. They've given him every single thing he's asked for. And honestly, the more likely scenario is he comes out of this with more money and stays at Ole Miss.
Here's my question for y'all. Everyone says the sky's the limit if he goes to Auburn. Why is the sky not the limit at Ole Miss, in your opinion? Because I've got a take that I want, but I want to hear what you guys say.
So that's a good question, because honestly, I was about to ask the question that got asked in between us and the group meet today, and that's, who does Ole Miss get if Kiffin leaves? So, like, my viewpoint of the Ole Miss job is it's very skewed. So, like, Ole Miss has, like, historically been really high, followed by periods of being really low. And they haven't won a national championship since, what, Arch Manning, right? That's the only one they've got. So, you're talking the 60s. So, in our lifetime, we've never seen Ole Miss be better than, what, 10-2? In a nice Sugar Bowl appearance, and, you know, hey, you've got a lot of great athletes, but they've never recruited. Now, granted, Hugh Freeze did have a top, what, he had the number one class in the country, or like a top three class? Number one class. I could with, number one class.
He had Kim Dichey, Laramie Tunzel, and DK Metcalf, I think, all in the same class.
Yeah, yeah.
All with recruiting violations.
All with recruiting violations, yeah. But that's my thing. It's like, I think the one thing that for me that makes the Auburn job probably better in my mind, to answer your question, is because I've never seen Ole Miss be more. I've never seen it. I've never seen Ole Miss be more than 9-3, 10-2 with a good bowl game appearance. And I mean, how many times have we seen Ole Miss beat Oklahoma State at the end of a good year? Like, Houston Nutt did it. Hugh Freeze did it. Like, and then last year, again, Lane Kiffin's in the Sugar Bowl standing across from a Big 12 opponent. And it seems like that's as high as it gets because I've, you know, and that's just my opinion and why I say that is because I've never physically seen it with my own eyes. I think Kiffin's the guy to do it. I think Kiffin's a fantastic coach. He's probably one of the top, what, 15, maybe 10 coaches in the country, depending on what your opinion of Lane Kiffin is. But I feel like Ole Miss's ceiling is capped until it's not. And I think it's going to take time because I don't think Ole Miss has ever had a coach like Lane Kiffin. I think Lane Kiffin's a better coach than Hugh Freeze. And Hugh Freeze got a lot out of Ole Miss, but it's like you said, Freeze would lay a dud. I think if you give Kiffin enough time, he can get there because the more I hear Kiffin speak, he's starting to sound like a young Nick Saban and in the mold of Saban. The more, like, I listened to his press conference today from Saturday, and he sounds just like Nick. And, but I mean, to answer the question, I've never seen it. And until I see it, I will value the Auburn job higher because I've seen Auburn play in two national championships in my lifetime. And I've seen Auburn in 2017, even with two losses, have a chance to beat Georgia and go back to the college football playoff. I've never seen Ole Miss in that position before until this year.
Why can Ole Miss, as a ceiling, or should I say, the question you said, the sky's limited Auburn. Why is the sky not the limited Ole Miss?
I think Auburn has a higher ceiling because, number one, NIL. I think the boosters are willing to pay more money at Auburn than the boosters at Ole Miss are willing to pay. And I think that's getting better at Ole Miss. I think the more Lane wins, the better that will get. And then I think Auburn has better athletic facilities. And athletic facilities, as Florida is starting to prove now with Billy Napier, athletic facilities lead to better players. Better players lead to winning more football games. And Lane Kiffin with better players would have won a national championship by now, in my opinion. That's the ceiling compared to Ole Miss. And I agree with Chad. I've never seen Ole Miss play in a national championship or even be close to winning one. And I've seen Auburn win one and probably should have won too. So that's kind of my viewpoint on it. But like I said in the group message today, I think Lane Kiffin has proven he could probably get to that point. It's just a different – I think it's tougher at Ole Miss than it is at Auburn.
So this is my feelings on the situation. So right now, and I only know this because I'm an alumni, so I get the emails and, you know, all the questions. Why are you donating? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there was a $1.5 billion project for all athletic facilities, basically headlined by Lane Kiffin. He is designing an upgrade for the Manning Center, which is right there, the indoor facility, the weight room, the locker room. All of it's going to be upgraded. So the facilities that Lane Kiffin wants, he's going to have. That is scheduled to be open. He's the one that's designing it. Everything will be there. So they'll be equal to the rest of the SEC because right now they are behind in facilities. But they're actively working to get there because that's what he said whenever he interviewed was, hey, we need this in order to get better players. So there's no denying that, but they're getting that. So back to the reason I asked that question is because if you look at in this year's Ole Miss team, you have first year starting quarterback. And if you look at what they lost last year, I guess you should say, they lost a guy who was a third round draft pick at quarterback. They lost every wide receiver they had, minus Jonathan Mingo, who was hurt all year last year. They lost all three starting running backs. They lost their starting left tackle, and they lost their starting right guard. So on offense, everything was a wash this year, and we're looking at a potential 10-2 at best. I still think 9-3. I mean, at worst, 8-4, which for Ole Miss, based off of everything that they lost last year, is incredible. And that is a testament to Lane Kiffin going in the transfer portal and getting guys like Zach Evans and going out and recruiting Quinshon Judkins and going out and portaling Jackson Dart, Michael Trigg, and a lot of key players like that. But at Auburn, I agree with you in a lot of ways. I do think they have a higher ceiling right now. But we're looking at trends, and we're looking at where things are right now. I think Ole Miss is trending in the right direction, and Auburn, it has to hit a slam dunk higher in order to maintain that better job status. And look, I get the concept that, hey, Auburn's played in two national championships recently, but Auburn also is very much a boom or bust team. As of late, like they either go to the national championship or they're 7-5. And so they're similar to Ole Miss in that historically better job. Obviously Tommy Tuberville left Auburn and, or left Ole Miss for Auburn. And then he had a lot of success there. And I think Lane would have a lot of success, but I think at the end of the day, he's got to ask the question, what am I doing this for? Why is it? And, you know, hey, if it's resources money-wise, there's nothing that Ole Miss can really do about that. But I think if you're Auburn, somebody's got to be the guy in the room that says, hey, are we willing to guarantee Lane Kiffin as much money as Georgia's paying Kirby? Are we willing to guarantee that off the bat and say that he's going to be able to turn this thing around immediately? Or are we going to have a potential Jimbo Fisher situation on our hands where everyone gets disconnected and checked out, but you can't buy him out?
Hmm. See, and one of the things that that I don't think you really touched on is, do when it comes to recruiting, I know Ole Miss is trending up, but do kids view the Ole Miss brand as bigger than Auburn right now? And do you think longevity wise that if Auburn does make the right hire, that Ole Miss can pass the Auburn brand and be a bigger brand than Auburn can? Like, say if they do get Hugh Freeze, and Hugh Freeze comes in and slam dunks Auburn, and Lane Kiffin stays at Ole Miss. Longevity-wise, who's still got the bigger brand? I think Auburn still wins out there if they flip it quick enough.
And to me, Lane Kiffin carries a brand within his own self that this is part of the reason why I think he's got a perfect marriage at Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin is Ole Miss football right now. So as long as Lane Kiffin is one of the top 3 to 5 head coaches, like as far as social media wise and what he gets out of players, and you know, if he's a top 5 head coach, then Ole Miss, I mean, you've already seen it. Ole Miss went from being a regional brand to a national brand since Lane Kiffin's been there. Is Auburn still a bigger brand? Yeah, absolutely. But Hugh Freeze would buy in and do the whole War Eagle thing and the orange and blue tie and all their little weird semi-cultish traditions. Like, Saturday felt a little culty. It was like the Battle of the Colts. It was the Colt in East Alabama and the Colt in – so, I mean, it was a really weird feeling, and I don't know that Lane Kiffin fits that mold where Hugh Freeze does. And so I think if it is a slam dunk hire, to answer your question, I think Lane Kiffin keeps Ole Miss at an equal footing with a Hugh Freeze Auburn. As far as branding goes, as Lane Kiffin Auburn is elevated over, I don't know, throwing a name in at Ole Miss that's not Lane Kiffin.
In the end, you got to look at it as the programs where they are right now. You take Gus Malzahn, stick Gus Malzahn back at Auburn, take Gus Malzahn, stick him at Ole Miss. Where does he do better? I think Gus Malzahn does better at Auburn than he does at Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss is the way Ole Miss is because of Lane Kiffin. I think Auburn, you could put any decent coach there, and I think he would do well. That's kind of how I view Auburn. And like I said, that might be because of perception of we've seen Auburn win a national championship. We've seen Auburn win the SEC West. I've never seen Ole Miss win the SEC West. And same with Texas A&M, same with Mississippi State, who, you know, after this weekend, they're well on their way. You could feel the tension in Stark Vegas and the cowbells still ringing in my ears. Michael Leach is going to get them there. But Auburn, they've done it. They've done it multiple times. And Ole Miss to me, I mean, it's if Lane Kiffin leaves, I don't see them continuing on that path just based on what I've seen so far. And maybe they do. Maybe it's the facilities. Maybe it's the boosters are finally going to buy in because Lane Kiffin's proven somebody can come in there and do well. But that's why I just think Auburn's an easier job. Right now it's tougher because you got to build it back up. But if both they're at an equal footing, Auburn, in my opinion, is the better choice.
I think I'm looking through this a little bit with powder blue and red lenses because I graduated from there. So it's a little bit of like a, you know,
you love the University of Auburn. You love them. You're a huge Auburn fan as well.
Hope they burn in a fiery pit. And if Lane Kiffin goes there, he can go with it. But I want to see Ole Miss be successful. And I feel like they're so freaking close. Like, I mean, you're talking about one possession away from still being in an SEC West contention. SEC West contention. So, look. That come from a place of bias. I acknowledge that I want Ole Miss to be successful. I hope that they do well. And if Lane Kiffin does decide to leave and go to Auburn, I hope for the love of God that they're able to hit a home run higher in Keith Carter. I imagine Keith Carter's already got a short list of candidates that he'd be on the phone with pretty quickly and have it narrowed down because portal window opens, I believe, December 10th.
Well, speaking of all this Magnolia State talk, though, Whit, you mentioned the Mississippi State game this weekend. How was your trip to Stark Vegas?
It was pretty wonderful, surprisingly. You know, I stayed with my brother in Birmingham. Didn't get to stay the whole weekend in Starkville, so I didn't get to do the bar scene. Didn't get to do getting to check out the campus, all that kind of fun stuff. But I did get to do the tailgating. We got there pretty early, and I ended up having a friend that has a little brother that's in Fiji, so we got to hang out at the Fiji tailgate and drink a little bit like college students like to do, and had a good time. I mean, they have an area called the Junction, and honestly, it's kind of like the Grove for Ole Miss. It's a lot closer to the stadium. It's a lot less packed, but I was actually surprised at how many tents were up there. They're not as flamboyant tents like how Ole Miss has, but it's a very similar environment. It reminds me probably a little bit more of the Quad at Alabama than it does the Grove at Ole Miss. But you're right in front of the stadium. You're overlooking, kind of like inside. So they had this big area up front where they had a band playing. They had two big TV screens showing football games, and on the big screen in the stadium, cause you could look into the stadium, they had seven screens going with games all day, which I thought was super cool. Yeah, and you couldn't see it from like everywhere in the Junction, but if you got to that area where you were watching the two TVs and the bands and all that, you could look in the stadium and like kind of check the scores and everything. So that was really cool. They sold beer, like little bar carts and stuff like that, like all over the place. And I don't think that's a typical thing they do. I think that was just something they did because this was a bigger game.
In the tailgate lot?
Yeah, like in the Junction. And like all the fraternities come to the Junction, and of course they get there. New members to come in early the night before, like at 3 a.m. And like stay up all night and get the tents all set up and everything. And so they ended up getting some good spots, and they had beer pong going and tons of beer. And of course, they were actually across the street from the dance team, which was nice. and it was really cool. I mean, like the best part of the whole experience too was Miss State's parking situation is the best college football parking situation I've ever seen in my life. There's so many parking lots outside the stadium, like a ton. And a lot of them, like the ones that are right next to the stadium, are reserved for Bulldog Club members, like the season ticket holders. But it's, if you go just a little bit further out, there's a little parking lot. It was $30. And when I say a little bit out, I mean maybe like 0.3 miles from the stadium, like super quick walk. And we parked right there. I think if you got there kind of closer to game time, game didn't start till 6. We were there at like 10:30. It might have been tougher to get in. There was a $10 parking lot that was probably a mile down. But it was all, I mean, easy situation. The only complaint I had was that it was so cold. I had to go into the Mississippi State bookstore and buy a hoodie. And I wore that Mississippi State hoodie throughout the rest of the day, to my dismay. But luckily, I had a Georgia football jersey on. So I took my Georgia football jersey off and put it on over my hoodie so I could block out the logo. But I told all, me being, you know, drinking, I told all the Mississippi State fans, I'm like, if we lose, I'm just letting you know, I'm going to take this jersey off and rush the field. Just to say I rushed the field at Mississippi State.
What's taking that goalpost home?
Obviously, I wouldn't have actually done that, but I just thought it would be funny. So, but I had a good time.
I was about to say, it looked super, super cold and wet and miserable on TV.
It wasn't that bad. It was really cold until I got the sweatshirt. And then once I got the sweatshirt, and once I got my brother a beanie because his ears were cold, then it was honestly fine. The worst part about the whole day was the cowbells. Those things were just miserable. In the tailgate lot, it was fine because people were just, you know, drinking and stuff, and people would bring them out. And so I'd be like, oh, let me ring your cowbell. And I'd ring the cowbell. Like, oh. And then once you're in the stadium and everybody's doing it at the same time, you're like, this sucks.
Were you in a pocket of Georgia fans at all? Or?
I actually was. We were on the Georgia sideline, but we were right on the 50-yard line. So that's where a lot of like the old faithful Mississippi State fans sit.
Right.
So we were around some of the old faithful. I had a couple next to me that were season ticket holders. And then right in front of me were like a family of four that were season ticket holders also. So they were pretty annoying, but then everyone else around us were Georgia fans. And actually, the most annoying cowbell in the whole stadium was a Georgia fan two rows behind us that literally just rang the cowbell nonstop throughout the entire game, regardless of who was on offense or anything that happened, just the whole game. The Mississippi State fan next to me was like, this has to be annoying you. And I was like, honestly, every single one of these freaking cowbells annoys the crap out of me. So that I'm not going to hear it from you. But it was pretty miserable. Once we got to halftime and it was still close, I was praying they would stop and they didn't. They kept going. Even throughout halftime, every time they did anything, like the band was playing, they go, da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's never ending. And until Georgia finally pulled away in the third quarter, and it got up to, I think we were up 38 to 19, so 18 or 19.
Yes.
When me and Ben decided to take off. So we started making the walk, and we actually, there was like a little cut through to kind of, you could like get on the field, like just barely on the field. So we walked on the field for a little bit and took a little video. And just to say, we touched the field at Mississippi State.
And your stadium tour continues.
Exactly. So add another one to the list, cross it off. Now I'm down to, I got four more. And that's it. And then I'm done.
And you get to see Georgia, the SEC. You get to see Georgia clinch the SEC.
We got to see Georgia clinch the SEC. Yeah, I got to watch LSU against Arkansas also, which honestly, I think if KJ Jefferson plays in that game, I think LSU wins that game by multiple touchdowns. But obviously, LSU.
Arkansas?
I say LSU.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't sleep last night, so I'm pretty exhausted. Arkansas would have won that game by multiple touchdowns. Fayetteville, dude, freaking snow in Fayetteville at noon? What in the world is going on there? That's crazy. I was pretty shocked. But LSU's defense showed up, so
that's what makes Arkansas such a tough place to play. Is it's all in November, it's cold, it's, and
like,
it's wet.
It's like Green Bay. It's just always snowy. It's always snowy in Fayetteville.
They always said that Fayetteville, Arkansas was the Lambeau of the South.
Yeah, it's like the North Pole. It's where Santa lives. Same Sam Pittman. He's about to get fired, apparently.
Oh my God! All right, Can I just like I want to inform people of that, right? I just want people to know who are listening to this that there are actually morons out there who say that they have a gut feeling that Sam Pittman's going to get fired at the end of the year.
Hey,
I would just like you to know if you share that opinion, you're a freaking moron. Like, you're an idiot.
If you know, you know. Obviously, Georgia, LSU, clinch the SEC championship. We'll have a lot to talk about with that game coming up in the next 2 weeks. Obviously, we still got week 13 college football. Week 12. I was going to say, it was 14 weeks. Maybe not. 14 counting week zero, I guess. That's going to be a good game. Looking forward to it. Like I said, we'll talk about it more once we get to that. Right now, let's go ahead and move into our pour one out, cut them off. Matt, who are you pouring one out for this week?
I'm pouring one out for two people this week. I'm pouring one out for Michael Harris the second, because our boy just won the Rookie of the Year. Shout out to the Atlanta Braves. Star rookie center fielder, had an outstanding year. And I've got to include Spencer Strider in this because he came in second for Rookie of the Year voting. So two teammates duking it out for Rookie of the Year. Honestly, Michael Harris getting called up, skipping Gwinnett, went straight from the SIP to the Atlanta Braves, was really the turning point of the Braves season. You know, nobody played a really good defensive center field for the Braves early. That kind of muddled in the struggles and made the Braves fall behind just because, look, I mean, it's just one of those things that you got to have be strong up the middle, as the old adage is. And Michael Harris made the Braves a lot stronger up the middle. So pour one out for Michael Harris. But I'm also going to pour one out for Bryce Young. And just because I feel like because he's not going to win a national championship as a starting quarterback at Alabama, he is, in I think a lot of ways, been underappreciated this year. What he is the Alabama football team this year. That's it. I mean, if it was not for Bryce Young this season, Alabama's maybe 5-5 right now, if that. I mean, he's been that special. Unbelievable. Some of the plays that he made against Ole Miss, where there was one, he's rolling out to his right, makes a defender pause because he acts like he's going to take off running, makes a defensive lineman stop just enough, and then floats a pass perfectly to Ja'Cory Brooks on the right side of the end zone. Just unbelievable play from Bryce Young. And I don't want it to go unnoticed that he's the most talented quarterback probably in Alabama history that's not going to win a national championship. And that's a damn travesty. He won one, obviously, as the backup for Mac Jones in 2020. But as a starter, damn travesty that Bryce Young isn't going to be able to put a ring on that finger. But got to pour one out for him because just unbelievable. And everybody's safe from me cutting one off this week. So, Chad.
I am definitely going to have to go and pour one out for the old FBS basement dwellers this week. And then specifically, I'm talking about three teams. I'm talking about the New Mexico State University Aggies, the UConn Huskies, who Matt mentioned earlier, and the Vanderbilt Commodores. Your typical FBS basement dwellers, absolute travesties of football programs that sometimes we wonder why they even play a schedule every year. But, you know, UConn is bowl eligible in their first year at a Jim Mora. That is absolutely awesome. A huge win over Liberty this week after Liberty beat Arkansas last week. I mean, what a huge, huge thing for that program, who didn't even play a season 2 years ago in 2020. Jim Mora, first year at UConn, immediately coming in and getting them bowl eligible after a 1-11 season. Like I said, in the one that was prior to that, they didn't even have one. That's incredible. New Mexico State. Got a win this week. It was against Lamar, so it's not impressive. But, I mean, New Mexico State's 4-5 under first-year head coach Jerry Kill, former head coach at Minnesota, after having a combined, 3+2=5, +1=6, +2=7, after only winning 7 games in the past 4 years since 2018. New Mexico State's typically the worst program in the FBS, but 4-5 is not bad. And then finally, Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt got their first SEC win since 2019 against Kentucky while Will Levis was in the game. Not like the South Carolina win against Kentucky where they beat him without Will Levis. No, Will Levis played. And Vandy went up there to a frigid Lexington, Kentucky, Got to win. Huge for Clark Lee and the Vanderbilt Commodores. It's a shame that that's not going to happen again this week. But good job by the FBS Basement Dwellers. Got to pour one out for them. And I'm going to cut off the Falcons. Man, it is miserable being a Falcons fan.
Cut them off again?
I haven't cut the Falcons off yet.
I think so.
Can we just sell this team, please?
Go ahead. Cut them off, Chad.
I'm going to cut them off. I mean, 2 weeks ago, me and Witt are sitting there on his couch watching the Atlanta Falcons play a game for first place. And they win a wild game against Carolina Panthers. They're 4-4, albeit I'm cutting off us as a fan base of the Falcons too. So no one's safe here. Like, there was absolutely nobody at that game. I get it. We were 3-4. But at the same time, if you're playing for a division lead, you need to show out a little bit more than our fans showed out. Like, the attendance 2 weeks ago against Carolina was pathetic. But either way, they won that game. And then they turn around and they fumble the game away against the Chargers last Sunday and had an opportunity to win that game. Young Wei Koo, God bless him, hail Southern, but he misses a kick that would have been the difference in the game. And then this week on Thursday Night Football, which has come out and lay an absolute dud against the Carolina Panthers, the same team that we just beat 11 days before. Marcus Mariota can't decide who he wants to be. The Falcons defense can't decide who they want to be. The Atlanta Falcons flat out can't decide whether or not they want to be good or not. I mean, you went from leading the division to all of a sudden you're 4-6. At some point, Brady's going to get hot. They went across the pond and won this Sunday. It's so frustrating to look at the rest of this Falcons schedule and know that they're probably going to end up going 7-10 and 8-9 and ruining the draft pick like they do pretty much every year. So I'm cutting off the Falcons for just putting us through the same crap that we have to go through every year and the misery that is this football team. I hate the Falcons. I wish I could change my fandom, but I can't. Wit.
Well, first I'm going to pour one out for Chad's head math earlier because that was actually pretty impressive.
That's great math, Chad.
I can't do that at all. I'm a complete moron. And I'm also going to pour one out for the Junction and Mississippi State in general, Stark Vegas. Great time. People don't talk about Mississippi State as one of the better tailgate venues in the SEC. A lot of people talk about Auburn. You know, they got a lot of really good tailgating areas. The Grove at Ole Miss. You got the Quad at Alabama. People talk about LSU all the time. Nobody has ever told me about Mississippi State. Everybody always says, Mississippi State, it's just another school. We just cross it off the list. Never even heard of the Junction before. I don't know if I just went on a good weekend because they were playing the number one team in the country or what, but I had a great time. That was one of my more fun trips to an SEC school. My expectations were extremely low going into it too. So, I was thinking I just go there, you know, have a couple beers, maybe watch a game at somebody's tailgate and then go in the football game and have a good time and whatever. But I had a blast. I mean, definitely a more underrated, environment. Starkville in general, I think is probably pretty dead. Like I said, I didn't get to see much of the city besides the campus, and the campus is great, but everything around it, it's all, you know, just pastures and cows and other stuff, but definitely pour one out for the Junction. And I'm cutting off cowbells, a tradition that I think is kind of cool, but I also think it's really stupid. I don't understand how a team is allowed to bring in cowbells. Every single fan brings in cowbells, and they can just ring those things as loud as they possibly can. Plus, throughout the game, on the screen, they said multiple times, the Mississippi State screen said, put down your cowbells, try yelling for a bit. Like, trying to knock people's ears out that are sitting in the game. And nobody did it. There was not a single time where it was more yelling than cowbells. It was more cowbells than anything. It was very different from any other college football environment I've ever been to. And I will say, I mean, I'd call it a hostile environment for sure. I mean, when that stadium's filled to the brink like it was last Saturday, it's a tough place to play. And I think, honestly, that's part of why Georgia kind of came out of that first half as close as it was. I think everything went well, but I mean, there's a couple turnovers that kind of turned the tides to where it ended up being that close. I think a lot of it was just not being ready for the cowbells, not being ready for Mississippi State actually having fans show up for a game like that.
Second half, obviously, Georgia pulled away and the fans started leaving and the cowbells got a little bit quieter. But when it was full blast, that was a, whew, I don't think I'm going to be going back for sure. I got to cross off the list and mad respect. I wouldn't go to school there. And I definitely, unless there's a good reason for me to go back, I don't see it happening. So cutting off cowbells, cutting off Miss State fans in general, even though they were a good time. They're a whiny crowd, to be honest, as Matt has heard. So, Keys, what about you? You pouring one out for?
I am pouring one out for Bills Mafia, despite the loss this week. Shout out to my friend Kira Bliley, coming down to hang out with us here in Georgia for the weekend. Lifelong Bills fan, took us over to a Bills bar in Atlanta, or sorry, Bills bar in Augusta, where we...
Same thing.
Yeah, no, not at all. Augusta's terrible. Sorry, Chad. Went over to this Bills bar in Augusta, and this Bills fans over there doing the Eilie Brothers shout chant and everything. It was an awesome time, even though the game, you know, didn't turn out the way that the Bills Mafia wanted it to. Looking forward to going up to Buffalo in a couple of weeks to join Bills Mafia myself. So pouring one out for Bills Mafia, staying strong throughout the loss, and hopefully they'll be playing the Falcons in the Super Bowl this year, right?
Shut up.
And I will be cutting off Georgia Southern football this year. It's, you know, they had Clay Helton to start the year. A lot of good news at the beginning of the year with that hire, the coaching staff he assembled and some of the players he was able to bring up. It was a good year for receiving for us. Even some points where the Sun Belt was still, the Sun Belt Championship was still in, you know, in view, but now it's in the rear view, after losing to the Raging Cajuns. Just losing games they shouldn't lose this year. Raging Cajuns is 5-5, you know, they beat some good teams this year in Nebraska, Old Dominion, James Madison. You know, it's hopefully the only thing I can say that will that's good that will come out of this is that we may be able to keep Clay Helton for another year if he's, you know, not doing great. So I'd like to have him and his recruiting classes for another couple of years, but cutting off Georgia Southern Eagles.
Well, I guess we got a couple locks of the week to get to. Matt, you got a lock this week?
I do have a lock this week, and my lock this week is going to be the Ole Miss Rebels over the Arkansas Razorbacks in Fayetteville. I've waffled back and forth on this pick. It's a 2.5-point spread right now favoring Ole Miss, which is interesting because, you know, Vegas has been pretty good about picks with Arkansas this year. Look, I really just think that Ole Miss coming off of a loss against Alabama is more dangerous to Arkansas than Ole Miss coming off of a win against Alabama. I think had Ole Miss been able to pull that off against Alabama, that it would have been a dogfight in Fayetteville. And I still think it's going to be a really good game. But just looking at the numbers, Arkansas's defense hasn't been overly impressive for the most part this year, except for last weekend. They played phenomenal against LSU all of a sudden. But overall, they've been just okay. And I really think Quinshon Judkins, the true freshman sensation running back for Ole Miss, I think he's going to have a day. Lane Kiffin's offense playing fast. Jackson Dart, I thought he played a really good game against Alabama. I think I could see him having a great day against that Arkansas defense. The one caveat, I guess, is KJ Jefferson. If KJ Jefferson plays in this game, I definitely could see Arkansas winning. If KJ Jefferson's out, I think Ole Miss has a chance to blow out Arkansas because that high power offense of Ole Miss could cause some real issues. And but anyway, either way, I just see Ole Miss winning this game and covering that 2.5-point spread in Fayetteville this weekend, which has been a house of horrors for Ole Miss historically. But I think Lane Kiffin is going to continue to break the mold there at Ole Miss and change the culture and have a chance to go 10-2 this year. Chad, you got a lock?
Yeah, man, my lock of the week is going to be Wake Forest by 10 over Syracuse. Man, you guys remember when Syracuse was 6-0 4 weeks ago and going into Clemson and, you know, ranked inside the top 15? Things are looking good, and, you know, now they're not. But, yeah, Syracuse going on the road this week, playing Wake Forest. Wake Forest, 10-point favorite. Got to lock that down. Sam Hartman's got 10 interceptions, but did you guys know that Sam Hartman has 28 touchdowns? That's insane. That is absolutely insane. Unless this ESPN stat is wrong, Sam Hartman has 28 touchdowns this year. That's freakish. And this Syracuse team has been absolutely blitzed ever since they got beat by Clemson. And not to mention, Syracuse is a dome team, and they're coming down to Wake Forest to play a night game in Winston-Salem. It's supposed to be 44 degrees. It's going to be a chilly night. Syracuse, not used to playing outside. Even though they are a New York team, they're still a dome team. Between the weather, between Sam Hartman's ability to throw the ball, and Syracuse is just reeling right now. I mean, they went from bowl eligible to on the cusp of maybe talking about Dino Babers getting fired if this collapse continues. So Wake Forest challenged North Carolina last week at home. It was a heck of a game. I think people kind of got lost in the fact that that was the 7:30 game on ESPN2 and just didn't really pay attention to it, but that was a great game. I think Wake Forest is going to bounce back and put a seventh win up on their resume and beat Syracuse by 10. Lock it down. Wit.
Chad, man, yeah. I mean, Sam Hartman's had a really good season. 28 touchdowns is unreal. But touchdowns, passing touchdowns are very overrated, if you ask me. For me, it's all about the passing yards. And Stetson Bennett, number 13 in the country in passing yards this year. Georgia's rolling into Kentucky this weekend, coming off two huge wins over SEC opponents, beating the snot out of Mississippi State last weekend, and doing what they did against Tennessee at home. Georgia's a 22.5-point favorite. Kentucky's coming off a loss to Vanderbilt. I mean, it's as bad as the lock as it can get. I don't see Georgia losing this or winning this game by less than 4 touchdowns. And honestly, I think if it was minus 30, I'd be locking the same thing. Matt's looking at me going, that sounds real familiar to that Mississippi State-Alabama game we sat through together. But I'll go right back into my bookie app and up that spread right now, and I'll do it. So Georgia minus 22.5. Stetson Bennett's going to go off. Kentucky might just have to fire Mark Stoops after this game. So
I feel like I'm just going to talk about Georgia Southern this whole podcast, so I'm going to keep doing it. Lock this week is Georgia Southern versus Marshall in Statesboro, Georgia. And the only reason I picked this one, well, usually I pick the Georgia Southern game, but this week I'll actually be in attendance. So I'm going to be excited to see that. Marshall, Georgia Southern, very similar to years this year. Marshall 6-4, and Georgia Southern is 5-5. So very similar seasons. They both beat a pretty good team earlier on in the year, or a big name team. Marshall beat Notre Dame earlier in their season, and Georgia Southern, you know, beating Nebraska. And I'm not too thrilled about this game, to be honest. I'll be excited to be there. It's the first time Georgia Southern will be playing Marshall. I'm going to give it to Georgia Southern. I'm going to go for the win by about a field goal. I'm just holding out for a win here in person. That's really the only reason I'm going with that. I'm not too confident in the team as of this point, but hopefully they get the win.
Keys has always given us a perfect segue into our first pick of the week. We got Marshall heading into Paulson Stadium in the Harvard of the South, Statesboro, Georgia, Georgia Southern. Marshall is a 4.5-point favorite. Matt, what do you think about this one?
Look, Marshall is an unbelievably good defensive team. Charles Huff, former Alabama, Nick Saban, Alabama coach, Nick Saban assistant, has done a really good job on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, not so much. They're pretty well balanced. They average about 195 on the ground and in the air a game. So they're a really well balanced team. Georgia Southern is air raid, except for there's one problem. They're giving up 479 yards a game defensively. Offensively, they're gaining 475. So they're literally giving up 4 more yards a game than they're gaining with an air raid offense that's getting 475 yards a game. So not good at all defensively. And Kyle Van Treese, he's got 13 picks this year. I think Marshall's going to have a heyday with him. They're really, really tough defensively. I think Marshall's going to win this game, and the power of Paulson is going to be kind of shut down. Marshall wins, and I think they win pretty handily. Georgia Southern, it's been a roller coaster ride. Beat good team in James Madison, beat a good team in Old Dominion, and then they have just done nothing but lose since then. And South Alabama is a pretty good team, and they held their own against them. But I just think this Marshall defense is special. They're well coached, they're disciplined, and I think Marshall wins. Chad.
Matt, I don't disagree with you often, but I'm going to disagree with you right here. And I think part of the reason that Georgia Southern's going to win is just because Keyes is going to be there. I mean, that's the same reason they're going to win on against Appalachian State, because, you know, Keyes is going to be there 2 weeks in a row. So how can Georgia Southern possibly lose their last two games of the year if Keyes is going to be in Statesboro? Yeah, I just think it's impossible.
We're fighting for that bowl eligibility. I want to see it happen.
Fighting for that bowl eligibility. I also didn't know that you were going down there this weekend, so psychs me up that you're going to be down there 2 weeks in a row.
Very, very last minute plan.
Last minute plan. But yeah, I'm very excited to get down there for the App State game next week, but we'll talk about that next week. I think Georgia Southern's got their back against the ropes here. I know Marshall's very well coached. I like Charles Huff. When Charles Huff was hired at Marshall, the first thing I did was text Matt and said, "What is Marshall getting?" And glowing reviews for the former Alabama Nick Saban assistant. But I think the power of Paulson comes into play here. Georgia Southern riding the roller coaster of the season they're on. And, you know, well, we've lost two in a row, so now it's time to go back up the loop instead of down it. It's just Georgia Southern is not a good team on the road, man. They're terrible on the road. They looked horrible last Thursday, even in an environment like Louisiana Lafayette. That place was quiet. There's a lot of seats were empty, but Georgia Southern just cannot win away from Paulson. And I think being back at Paulson, feeling like their backs are against the ropes and they're reeling a little bit, trying to fight for bowl eligibility, but they're gonna get a win this week. And I think they win because they're at home. Defense isn't going to stop anybody, but Marshall's offense isn't exactly that great. So we'll see. But I think Van Treese plays well. You know, hopefully we don't turn the ball over like we seem to do all the time, and hopefully our defense can pick up some stops. But I'm going to go with Georgia Southern at home. Whit.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Matt has glowing reviews of Charles Huff, then Matt's an idiot. Clay Helton is just going to roll over Marshall. No emotion whatsoever. No logic to this pick at all. Just full-on Paulson Stadium magic. Georgia Southern finally back over 500 this week. Go Eagles. See you next week. Moving to the next game, we got number 4, TCU, still in the playoff hunt, taking on Baylor. Crazy. In Waco, one of my favorite places on earth. TCU is a 3.5-point favorite. Matt, who you got?
Man, this TCU team is kind of fun to watch. I'm not going to lie. I watched a good bit of that TCU-Texas game on Saturday night. I was flipping between that and the Georgia game. The Georgia game was kind of settled. I pretty much watched Texas exclusively and TCU. But TCU's fun, man. Max Dugan's a really good quarterback. He made plays whenever he needed to. Texas defensively played a really good game. They had a great game plan for TCU, but TCU had an even better one for Quinn Ewers. Quinn Ewers looked very out of place on a lot of throws in that game, and credit to TCU and Sonny Dykes for the job that's been done there this year. It's very much similar to what Dave Aranda did last year with Baylor, and that's why I am picking TCU to stay undefeated, because they're just hot right now. And they've had the games where they should have lost, like against Oklahoma State and against Kansas State, and they came out on top anyways. Baylor got absolutely obliterated by Kansas State last week. They're a weird team. They score 3 points against Kansas State after coming off of a what I thought was a pretty good win against Oklahoma. I just don't think Baylor is consistent enough this year for me to think that they're going to be the team that knocks off undefeated TCU. It is in Waco, but I think that being a noon game is going to help out TCU a little bit. They're going to come in prepared and ready to play, and I think TCU stays undefeated. Chad.
Yeah, man, TCU keeps proving me wrong every week. I keep waiting each and every week for TCU to finally lose, and they haven't done it yet. They got two more games left, and if you want me to be completely honest, with Iowa State coming into Fort Worth next week, spoiler alert, we don't even have to pick this game next week. TCU's not going down next week, and I think even with this game being in Waco, they're not going down this week. A little bit of a sleepy 11 a.m. start, but I think the difference in this game is Max Duggan versus Blake Shapen. Blake Shapen cannot hold on to the football. He's got 13 touchdowns, but he's got 8 interceptions to go along with it. I know that's plus 5, but that's not really the kind of numbers that you want to have. Max Duggan is 25-2. Max Duggan is plus 23. TCU does not turn the ball over. Baylor turns the ball over. I think TCU is able to overcome a slow start and absolutely cakewalk their way through the Bears down in Waco. TCU, by the week, continues to look more legit week after week after week. TCU looking like a playoff team. I'm going to go TCU on this one. They keep on rolling. Whit.
Yeah, I mean, TCU coming into the game against Texas, the biggest knock on them was that their defense just wasn't good enough. And they come out and, I mean, it gets what I consider a pretty good offense. They only give up 10 points, and 7 of that was from a fumble, a weird fumble recovery that went for a touchdown at the end of the game. So they really only let Texas's offense score 3. Granted, in that game, they only scored 17, which, to me, the TCU offense is going to have to be better than that if they're going to want to compete in the playoff. But Baylor's not a playoff team. Like Chad said, Iowa State's not a playoff team. TCU's going to the freaking playoff. I totally see it happening. Last week, I was completely wrong on what I thought would happen with them in Texas. And TCU came away with a win in Austin with College Game Day there, which for some reason I feel like every time College Game Day goes to somebody's home stadium, they end up coming out with a win. And that just didn't happen again. So I'm rolling with TCU for the rest of the way. I think they end up as the 4 seed. And I think right now everybody else is playing for that 3, because right now I think Georgia's got the 1 or 2 locked. And I think the winner of Ohio State and Michigan's got 2 locked, 1 or 2 probably. And then after that, it's Tennessee, one of the Pac-12 teams, or the loser of Ohio State, Michigan. And that's all you got left for the playoff. And I'll say this too. If you told me TCU would be 10-0 right now and Duke would be 7-3 before the season started, I would call you a moron, because that's absolutely crazy. I can't believe it. Moving on to our next game, we got one of the bigger rivalries in the Big 12, if not the biggest, or at least the second biggest. Oklahoma State at Oklahoma. Both teams unranked coming to this game for, I want to say, the first time since I can remember. Both these teams pretty disappointing this year, in my opinion. I think a lot of people picked them to be in the Big 12 championship, and they are both so far out of the running, it's not even funny. Oklahoma is a 7.5-point favorite. Playing Oklahoma State at home. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, this game it's bedlam. I mean, you never really know what's going to happen. And this is, I believe, is this year the last bedlam that we're getting, or is next year the last bedlam that we're getting?
For some reason, I thought it was this year, but I don't think Oklahoma, Texas are technically supposed to go to the SEC till 2025.
Yeah, that's what I kind of was feeling like that, but I feel like I heard that this was the last bedlam. Man, if you want to talk about two teams that have sank faster after starting off really well, I don't know two teams that have other than these two. And it makes this game a really tough one to pick, because just a couple of weeks ago, Oklahoma State was a top 10 team. I want to say 4 weeks into the season, prior to the Kansas State game, Oklahoma was a top 6 team and looked like they could be on the verge of being a playoff contender, and boy, have they fallen downhill. Oklahoma is just not a very good team this year. Oklahoma State, also not a very good team this year. So really in this one, I think it's going to be high scoring. I don't know what the over-under is, but I'd hit it. I would pound the over on this game. I mean, it could be 80-something, and I would still say, yeah, pound the over, because neither of these teams play really well, good defense. Oklahoma scores a ton of points, and since Oklahoma's the home team, I'm going to go with Boomer Sooner on this. Dylan Gabriel and Jeff Lebby conjure up enough points to outlast the Oklahoma State Cowboys. The Pokes just hadn't been playing well recently, so I'm going Boomer Sooner. Chad?
I'm right there with you, man. What a massive disappointment this game is. Usually, typically at the end of the year, this game has Big 12 title implications. This game sometimes has college football playoff implications, like it did last year. and Oklahoma State usually gets dominated in this rivalry, but they won what was one of the best games of the year last year at the end of the season. I don't know if you guys remember that game, but that was absolutely one of the best college football games in all of 2021. But looks different this year. 8 combined losses between both teams. Like Matt said, both these teams were sitting top 10 not too long ago. Now all of a sudden, Oklahoma's 5-5, Oklahoma State's 7-3. And this game simply is bedlam. And that's why I'm just going to roll with the home team and the team who dominates. Because like Matt said, pound the over. There's really no way to predict this game because every year it's absolute madness. It's absolute bedlam. This is a great rivalry. I'm sad to see this thing going away. It usually produces absolute classics. But rolling Boomer Sooner on this one. Whip.
Yeah, real quick. I mean, it's bedlam. It's going to be a crazy game. I think Oklahoma State's just a better football team than Oklahoma this year, through and through. I mean, the way Oklahoma's played the last 2 weeks, they just don't look like they're in it right now. I think they're ready for year two under Brent Venables. I think he's going to have to bring in some transfers to get this roster up to date with where they need to be in the Big 12. So I'm going to take Oklahoma State. I definitely think they cover. It's going to be a really, really close game, like it always is. But I think Oklahoma State gets another one on Oklahoma 2 years in a row. And for this next one, we got number 8, USC at number 12, or UCLA. What was number 12, UCLA? These rankings are not updated. UCLA coming off the loss to Arizona, which just completely blew me away. I didn't even see it happen Saturday night. I found out like Sunday night randomly while watching the NBC game. They lost that game. I couldn't believe it. USC, obviously, they should get a bump up tomorrow. They'll probably end up being in that top 6 range. USC, 2.5-point favorite, playing in the Rose Bowl. Matt, what do you think?
This game, to me, comes down to quarterback play. And DTR has outlasted what I thought he was going to do this year. Chip Kelly's been under the gun, kind of came in a little bit with a very warm seat this year. And DTR has played really, really well all season long. But a guy on the other sideline, Lincoln Riley, brought a guy with him from Oklahoma that's pretty darn good too. And Caleb Williams, I think, is been one of the best quarterbacks in college football this year. DTR has been really good. And to me, I think Caleb Williams has just been better. USC has continued to play really well, even though Jordan Addison didn't play last week. So, I know that he's been hurt. So losing a Biletnikoff winner is never great for an offense, but the train keeps rolling. Obviously, they took a little bit of a step back offensively. But, look, USC to me is just a team that is going – they're going to force the conversation. Pac-12 champion that's one loss versus one loss Tennessee for a final spot in the playoff. I want that chaos on Selection Sunday. Give me the chaos. Give me USC to win. Fight on, Trojans. Chad.
Yeah, the Pac-12 playoff hopes, per usual, here in about week 10 are on life support. USC is the only one who can carry the torch. Washington absolutely put Oregon's chances to bed. And then UCLA let 3-6 Arizona, led by a guy who was the running backs coach of the New England Patriots in 2020, come in there and absolutely smoke them up and down the Rose Bowl. Arizona ran all over them. DTR, if you want my honest opinion, he's shown flashes of being a great athlete, but let's be real. There's a reason that this is year 5 at UCLA, and he's been there the whole time through the Chip Kelly tenure. Chip Kelly's cooled his seat down. I think he's bought himself some more time, but I think DTR is a very overrated quarterback, and I think the main difference in this game is UCLA has no atmosphere. They have absolutely no atmosphere. The fact that this game is at home in the Rose Bowl means absolutely nothing. It's probably going to be more, you know, whatever that yellowish-reddish, don't know what those are called, shirts in the building. USC is basically going to have a home game in the Rose Bowl. There's not going to be any kind of atmosphere to tell me any different. USC keeps the Pac-12's playoff hopes alive because they simply just have far, far more athletes than UCLA does. Whit.
Yeah, I mean, this game is another one that I just think is super simple. I mean, you look at the stats. USC is ranked 7th overall in offense. UCLA is ranked 69th
in total defense this season. And a lot of that has to do with UCLA's defense. Their passing defense is ranked 102nd in the country. And USC, obviously everybody knows, the offense runs through Caleb Williams, runs through Jordan Addison, Mario Williams. They're tons and tons of stacked receivers. They're ranked 10th in the country in passing offense. I think it's a bulldoze. I mean, I think USC will show out for this game. I think they know that they have to win this if they want to keep their hopes alive. Those guys are playing for Lincoln Riley right now, and with the way Oklahoma's looking, I think Lincoln Riley's enjoying being on top. So I think they're going to keep rolling. I think they win this game pretty handily. I'm going to say about like 20 points. And for the next game, we got Utah taking on Oregon. Both two-loss teams has huge Pac-12 championship implications. Oregon, 3.5-point favorite in Autzen Stadium. Matt, who you got?
Yeah, you know, I thought the power of Eugene was going to keep Oregon afloat last week against Washington. That was an awesome atmosphere, by the way, if you didn't get to watch any of it. Autzen was rocking. It was loud. But, man, I never thought I would say this, but the Oregon uniforms are starting to bother me with how bright they are. I guess I'm just getting old. Call me the old man who yells at clouds. But I think they're going to beat Utah this week. Dan Lanning's had a fine first season there in Oregon. Offensive line play has been phenomenal. And if you look at – and I didn't realize this. I was actually listening to a podcast with Mike Griffith from the AJC who covers the Georgia Bulldogs. Oregon outrushed Georgia in the opening game this year. I did not realize that because it was kind of a dominant one-sided game, 49 points put up by the Dogs. But Oregon actually has a really good offensive line, and they've been able to run the ball effectively all year long. So I think that Oregon's going to continue that against a really decent Utah team. I don't want to call Utah good. They're not bad, but I don't certainly think that they're that good either. Give me Oregon over Utah. Eugene's back. Autzen's back. Go Ducks. Bad.
First of all, let me just start this off by saying shout out to the Big 12 for getting two games picked by us on the show this week. We usually just dismiss the Pac-12 for the irrelevant piece of garbage that they are. But shout out for them for having some solid teams this year. I think Oregon's probably going to dominate this game. Oregon got beat in a barn burner in a heck of a game last week. If you didn't watch that game, you should really go back and rewatch it. Fantastic game, but let's be honest. Oregon blew that. Oregon blew that game by some questionable coaching decisions by Dan Lanning inside the last minute. Why would you go for it on 4th-and-1 inside your own 35 with under a minute to go? Unbelievably stupid decision. Oregon should not have lost that game. And I think they come out this week fired up, ready to go. Autzen's going to be bumping. Eugene's going to make the difference. I mean, they were loud last week. This is a big game. Big Pac-12 and Rose Bowl championship implications right now. And I think Oregon's the better team. Oregon's going to come out and make up for that loss. Give me the Ducks. Whit.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at these two teams, both teams have really good rushing games. Both also have really good rushing defenses. And honestly, the way they play is very, very similar. The difference between these two teams is one team has a Heisman contender at quarterback, and the other one does not. The other one has Cam Rising, who is a solid quarterback. But surprisingly enough, Bo Nix is a Heisman contender. Right now, if you look at the overall, the lines for Heisman contenders right now, Bo Nix is 5th overall for Heisman, which is unbelievable. If you told me Bo Nix was going to transfer from Auburn, go to Oregon, get in with those guys there, and just take the team that came back from last year, which they lost a lot of really solid offensive pieces from, like C.J. Verdell and like Troy Dye, who is now at UCLA. They lost a lot, and they're doing really well. Bo Nix is going off. So I'm taking Bo Nix. I'm taking Dan Lanning. Oregon gets the win, and I'm with Chad. Actually, I'm not. I take that back. I think it's close. I definitely think they cover that 3.5-point spread, but I'm going to say it's at least within 10.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into the first episode as Rowdy Southern Saturday. We're really excited about this rebrand, and we hope you are too. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple Music, and follow our social media at Rowdy Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.